Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, hello everybody, welcome to another edition of the Type 1 Radio Lounge. I'm joined tonight by many friends, Sonic.
Hello.
Thomas Sheridan's online with us.
Good evening everybody.
We've got Jay Parker, another Type 1 radio host.
Hi there.
And we're joined by, we're extremely honoured tonight to be joined by the one and only Mr. Mark Passio from whatonearthishappening.com. Good evening, Mark.
Good evening, and I'm really honored to be here. It's going to be a great conversation.
Yeah, well, the pleasure is all ours. Sorry, yeah. So, where indeed do we begin with your outstanding research and work has been going on for how long? 20 years, 20 plus years, is it?
Well, if you take it back to, I guess, the time that I started looking into all things esoteric in general, you could say it's been about that long, sure, you know, since my late teen years. So, yeah, it's going on 20 years at least.
Wow. Did I hear you say once upon a time that you started to notice within, because you're from a Christian background originally?
Yes, my family is a Roman Catholic.
Right, and
mostly.
You started to notice the astrotheology sort of stuff early on.
That didn't really come until much later, actually. The indoctrination of organized, you know, cultural religion being strong in my family, when they passed on that indoctrination to me, it definitely took in my earlier years. But I realized at some point that. You know, it was a control mechanism, but I didn't have the knowledge of astrotheology until much later. Lacking that framework of knowledge, the realization that this was all basically a system of control led to a lot of anger and hatred in me for religion in general. And that's what pushed me into the dark side of things and got me interested and involved in the occult, and specifically the dark occult, because I wanted to gravitate toward the antithesis of the religious framework that I had been raised in.
Yeah, sure.
It was only until much later, after my involvement in the dark occult, that I gained the knowledge of astrotheology, and then all of that kind of anger and hatred that I had for that organized, you know, cultural religion kind of faded away, because I recognized what it was at that point.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, because I've only just, in the last sort of 3-4 years, come to this knowledge, and I too have been very angry. I mean, I read Not in His Image, you know, this book by...
Yes, by John Lash.
And that just made me angry by the, you know, I just wanted to burn down every church, punch every priest I saw. Just because, you know, you have been lied to all your life, and thankfully for people like your good self, this is now coming to light, and we can actually work on ways to combat this and get to the truth, God damn it.
You know, like I like to tell people, there's a core seed of truth that underlies all of the religious traditions. The problem is there's so much exoteric framework that's wrapped around it that is there to keep people from the true realization of that deep core spiritual truth that lies underneath, that many people never break those outer shells of that exoteric framework to get to that truth that lies at the center of those traditions. And it's a shame, because if they would stop taking the literal interpretation of all of these religions, maybe they would get down to some of the spiritual principles that lie at their heart.
Yeah, sure.
Well, we live in a world where you know, pretty much 99% of the population, adults, are in arrested development because of this system that's been forced on us since birth.
Yes.
Yeah.
absolutely. We're a society that is largely comprised of grown children. As sad as it is to say, and as harsh as that may sound, that's where we're at. And this is something that I really want to get more deeply into as time goes on, really talking about the psychological characteristics of most modern human beings who are still in the illusory system of mind control and belief in government and slavery, because that's what it is if we stop euphemizing it. These people are stuck in spiritual and psychological they may be physically grown up individuals, but they have not grown up psychologically and spiritually, and that's one of the things that lies at the core of the problem that we face today.
And so I was watching your conversation with Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope yesterday, and I thought it was really interesting that where he was bringing up part of your New Age bullshit presentation, a particular slide where you were talking about frequencies. And it just clicked when you were talking about it, how when these so-called New Age people were saying, talking about the frequencies, and I don't think they realize how you're presenting it, of the when it's a low frequency, it's not being, people aren't checking what reality is, and they're just almost coasting, whereas the higher frequency, the more you're checking what is going on now and now and now, the more in reality you are. I thought that was an amazing description of the state of affairs.
Yeah, I'm glad you found that valuable. I inserted that in one of my presentations for that kind of model. It's not really my model. I came across that from some other researcher whose name I really can't recall right at the present moment. But I added that into my presentation at the Free Your Mind 2 conference back in April, and I was really hoping that people would understand the model that I was getting at, and it would click with them. Basically, it's if you represent truth as a line on a graph, a kind of a horizontal line like an axis, and you then look at human perception as like a sine wave, a simple sine wave on that graph. You know, where it intersects with the line is where it comes into contact with truth, and it wavers from the line, so therefore, you know, our perception can waver from the truth. But as we go to a higher frequency, the wavelength becomes shorter and it hits the line much more frequently. So really we're aligning ourselves with truth as we take our perception and stop trying to fit everything that we perceive into a preconceived box of reality that we've been given by some control system like religion or money or the New Age movement, etc. We have to do the opposite. We have to try to align our perception with the actual reality that is already there. And as we do that, we're actually coming up to a higher frequency in consciousness. So it's a pretty simple model, especially if you see it visually. With the visual aid, of course, it helps a lot. But I'm glad you enjoyed that model and found it valuable. And it, as you said, it clicked with you. And I hope it would with other individuals as well.
You know, I hope that. I too watched that presentation just recently today. And found that brilliant. Good work. The word religion you've gone on about before, can you break that down again for us? That means to bind and tie people?
Yeah, in one of its etymological definitions, yes, it does. I like to look at the word religion in two different ways because it does have a kind of a dual meaning. So in one sense, religion could be something that holds us back and binds our progress. We're not moving forward if we hold on to it. So this etymological definition comes from the Latin language, which the word religion in English is based upon. It comes from the Latin verb religare, R-E-L-I-G-A-R-E, religare. And religare in Latin means to hold back or to thwart from forward progress, usually by tying up to hold in place. So I give the example, if you didn't want a horse or a mule or something like that to be able to go far, if you had a post, you could tie it to that post and then you would be thwarting its forward progress. It would not be able to leave that area where you tied it up. That would be the use of religare. It means to tie back, to hold back, or to thwart from forward progress by binding. Now, in that sense, a false religion does just that, because where humanity needs to go to from where it's at right now, lost in the land of illusion, it needs to go to the truth. That's where it needs to get to in order to free itself. If we are to go there, we can't be held back by the fetters of illusion, okay, and by all these different belief systems that don't serve humanity to get to the truth, okay? So we have to remove the false religions, the false belief systems that are tying us back and holding us back and stopping our forward progress to get to the truth. That's the negative connotation, the negative definition of the word religion. There is also a positive side to the word, because the word religare in Latin also meant to reunite with after something had been separated from something. Mm-hmm. So, if dropped a piece of pottery on the ground and it broke into like 10 pieces, those had been shattered. And if you were to gather them all up and put them all back together, okay, like maybe with some glue, that would be reuniting that as an integral unit of pottery, okay? So in that sense, you would be reuniting something and making it integral once again. And this is the positive term, the positive definition of the word religare in Latin. In that sense, a true religion could unite us back to the truth. So when I say a true religion, I personally feel there is only one true religion, and that is truth itself. And if you will, the thing that brings us into harmony with the truth is the understanding of natural law. Now, I don't like to call those things religions because I don't really consider them religions in the connotation that most people hear the word religion today. Okay, so I'd rather look at those things as sciences, as things that we could truly know without a belief system. A belief system isn't required for an understanding of natural law, for example. Okay, so it is either that you know how it works or you don't understand how it works. So in that sense, you know, some people would you know, kind of look at that as a religion because it is capable of reuniting us with truth that is actually there and uniting our perceptions with that reality. I tend not to look at those things as religion at all, even in the positive connotation. I think just, you know, the only truth, the only religion, as far as I'm concerned, is truth itself. Yeah. And that's the only thing that can really reunite humanity with an understanding of how the laws of nature work and get us out of this slavery system that we've been living in since really, you know, the dawn of this species. Yeah. So that's how I see both the negative and the positive interpretations of the word religion.
Yeah, so do you see a sort of connection between the word religion and the word government? Because does the word government not also have similar etymological origins?
Sure. Well, I see government as a religion, a negative one or a false religion, if you will. And the word government, of course, literally means to control the mind, from the Latin gubernare, which means to control. And then, and of course, we get the word gubernatorial from that in English, which is related to governing or a governor. And the second part of the word mens, M-E-N-T, comes from the Latin noun mens mentis, which means mind. So literally the word government means to control the mind. And just as a side note, people will debate this etymological definition. or breakdown, because they'll say, well, what about all the other words that end in ment? Does that also mean mind? And the answer is yes, it does. Yes, they do. All of the other words that end in ment, the originators of the English language deliberately chose the word mind in Latin to mean the state of or the condition of. Okay, so any word that you can think of, commitment, for example, okay, it literally means commit, okay, and then ment means mind. So it's a state of mind where you are committing to something. Anything that you can create the condition of, it has to exist in the mind first. So, for example, let's say dismemberment. Okay, to literally break apart in multiple pieces and separate. Okay, this is a mental condition first. You have to think of breaking something apart in that way, or tearing somebody limb from limb in that way, before you would be able to actually do it in the physical reality. Any condition that is present in the 3D reality that we live in must first have originated in mind, in the mental realm, in some form or fashion. And therefore, the suffix ment in English is actually based on the principle of mentalism, meaning that if it manifests in the physical domain, it must have originated originally in the mental domain. So when we put those terms together, gubernare and mens mentis, it literally means the control of the mind, to control the mind. That's what the word government means. And if you break down the two overarching forms of mind control that exist, the two basic dichotomies of mind control that exist in the world, there is a left brain modality of mind control that works upon the left brain, and it's designed to separate the person from the right brain, the right brain modalities of the mind, okay? The other religion is there to work upon the right brain and then hold back the workings of the left brain from the individual. So if we look at the left brain modality first, that is government. Government is a system of basically violence, okay? It's a system of control that is based upon violence ideology, okay? That's all chronic overuse of the left brain to get into that mental state where you actually believe that you have a right to conduct violence against other people and then to support that being done. So that's a left brain modality. So I consider that the religion that works through the left brain, and it binds the right brain out of the way, because people who believe in this, you know, don't really have much compassion or right brain or holistic thought processes going on. They're very narrow-minded, narrow-focused, and think this is the only way that it can be and can exist, and we need control like this in the world. It's a very fear-based mindset, as is really all religion and all things that hold back the mind from truth. It's all based in fear. But that's the left brain modality. The right brain modality of religion is what I would call cultural religions, and then you combine those with the New Age movement. And the New Age movement, I just look at really as a catch-all for anybody that doesn't fall into the right brain modalities of the cultural religions. And what I mean by cultural religions is Christianity, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, Taoism, etc. You know, any of the cultural religions, Islam, that we find throughout the world. They're all right brain modalities because they're all about basically getting up one's sovereignty and essentially, you know, prostrating yourself before the will of some deity or other. And I'm not, you know, saying that we should not understand that there is a higher force in the world, but the higher force in the world certainly I feel does not want us to do the things that a lot of these cultural religions claim that this force wants us to do. And they never really talk about the true will of the universe, which is alignment with natural law and a true deep understanding between right and wrong. And many of these religions don't have that distinction down to any kind of a level of clarity, most certainly. They do not. But to go back to this right brain modality that includes cultural religions and the New Age movement, that works all through the right brain to keep it chronically, you know, overworked. And then it's binding the left brain out of the way to stop people from really understanding critical thinking and engaging in critical thinking and logical usage of the left brain, this hemisphere. So again, those two religions, when you put them together, you put government together with religion, what you're really doing is you're combining two states of mind, master think and slave think. And then when you do that on a world level, on a scale of an entire civilization, you have the kind of civilization that we live in now, a society where it's completely run by psychopathic individuals who consider themselves masters of others, or in other words, slave owners, if we stop euphemizing, and then a massive group of people who believe in this so-called religion called government, and basically turn over their inherent sovereignty and accept being slaves, and that's slave think. So that's where we're at now, in that level of extreme imbalance on a planetary scale.
Absolutely, yeah, and they're using the reptilian brain sort of fear-based stuff on us all the time to keep this in place.
Sure. People are so afraid of even... Yeah, they're so afraid of even speaking out. So many people won't even say anything that is anti-government because they're so afraid of the consequences that they think will happen to them. Well, the consequences for not speaking out are going to be much more dreadful than the ones for speaking out.
Absolutely. Thomas, do you want to jump in here, mate? Thomas?
Yeah, great stuff, Mark. People who are deficient. Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Hello?
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
Am I there?
Yep.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yep.
You can hear me? Yeah. Yep. Yeah, great stuff. People who are, it's been shown, who are either deficient or, you know, prominent in either hemisphere of the brain, either left or right, are the easiest ones to hypnotize. There's because they don't, the two hemispheres are not working in balance.
Yes.
In different levels, they need a kind of an authority figure in different ways. You know, so that's why the overly, as Mark said, the overly right-brained person needs an authority figure in the form of a guru, where the overly left-brained figure person needs an authority figure in the guise of an official or an administrative, you know, secular leader. But it's the same. Ultimately,
right.
It's the same expression of the same dysfunctionality. Now, one thing
that's right.
really interesting that I found out like last year is. 4% of nerve fibers that run between the two hemispheres of the brain, the corpus callosum, they run across it. And the purpose of those fibers is not to this is amazing when I found this out. They actually showed on an fMRI scan, is not for the two hemispheres to work in balance, but for one hemisphere to shut the other one down. So literally, an extremely left-brained individual who, say, is very sort of dogmatic, rigid, you know, conformist and secular in terms of their materialistic or social or cultural beliefs, their brain, under the fMRI scan, it actually showed that these 4% of nerve fibers shut the right brain off. That, now, you look at that, and that's, you know, if you look at the evolutionary purpose of the two hemispheres of the brain, they're to keep us alive in the material world. The right brain has peripheral vision, while you're focused on a task with the left brain. Yet, in the terms of our sort of cognitive worldview, or our kind of, what you would call our, you know, our mental worldview, we're so vulnerable. If we were to apply our thinking into the natural world, like if we were put back into the natural world, we'd be eaten in no time by predators. But yet in the sort of non-natural world, in the secular, religious, whatever you want to call it, world, cultural world, our two hemispheres are so out of sync that, like you said, we're totally at the mercy of the predators. And who are the predators in that domain? The good old psychopaths.
That's right. That's right. And to go back to what you were saying originally, how these are just two expressions of the same thing. It's just a dialectic. It's a simple dichotomy, but we're really talking about the same underpinning as far as a psychological state of expression goes. What we're really talking about here is these people are children. They, you know, whether they're, again, looking for approval from the guru or looking for approval from the state officials, they're looking for a parental figure, ultimately. That's the hallmark of psychological infancy, of childhood. you're looking for an authority figure in general to say what you may or may not do, instead of trying to understand that for yourself, what the real difference between right and wrong behavior is for oneself. So that is all stemming from the same root psychological issues that are deeply entrenched in the subconscious mind, and these individuals who I'm referring to as psychological and spiritual children, they have not actually gone into that subconscious material to understand what issues are there to make them want approval from other beings, to make them want to say, you tell me what I should be doing and what I should not be doing. And again, my work in the future is going to move toward the idea that this is all stemming from psychological abandonment issues. And I could give a real brief example that would very strongly, I feel, highlight this for when it comes to government itself. If you just look at the two-party system in most governments, okay, most Western governments, let's say, here in the United States, we have the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And you just look at the dichotomy between them and the type of individual, and again, yes, we are generalizing or stereotyping here, okay? We're not going to say 100% of the individuals who fall into these party lines, but in general, the type of individual who is a leftist, okay, a person who you would call liberal / neoliberal, okay, a Democrat here in the United States, for example, what do they want the role of government to be? What is it that they – what function do they want government to play, okay? And if you ask them and you just assemble a laundry list of really what they want government to be, you'll find that what they want it to be is they want it to be the caretaker of the people. They want it to provide – the goods and services that people need on a day-to-day basis, instead of people understanding what those requirements are and then fulfilling those requirements themselves, okay, of their own accord and their own responsibility. So they want government to be the caretaker / nurturer, okay? So what is the caretaker / nurturer of the traditional family and the traditional development of the child? That is the mother figure in general, okay? So in other words, the proxy, the psychological proxy that these individuals are looking for is the mother figure. So at somewhere down in the subconscious mind, the individuals who are of that mindset have motherly abandonment issues. Okay, mother abandonment issues is what they is the unresolved trauma or the unresolved psychological issue that is not being dealt with on the leftist side of the political spectrum. On the right, the far right, or what you would call the conservatives / neoconservatives, and here in the United States, these would be the Republican Party members. They're looking for something different. They want the role of government. They want government to fulfill a different role. And what they're looking for it to play the role of protector and defender, okay? Even to the point where it should go out and be the policeman of the world and go out and do preemptive assaults on other sovereign nations to protect our interests, okay? This aspect is playing this a cop sort of role, okay, this policeman of the world kind of role, or playing this defender or, even preemptive aggressor would be the role of a strong and aggressive father figure that would handle the physical needs and the physical requirements of the family the standard framework of a family. So what these individuals who are on the political right are looking for is a father figure. That's what they're looking for in proxy for the government, because somewhere deep in their subconscious, in their psyche, they have fatherly abandonment issues, and they're looking for the state to come in and play that role in proxy. So just looking at government itself by itself, itself, you see the deeply nested psychological parental abandonment issues that exist in the individuals who strongly believe in this institution and basically give up their own inherent sovereignty unto it, because their psychological children who have abandonment issues either toward the mother or the father, and they are looking for government to essentially play that role that has been lacking in their lives, and it's been an issue that has been nested into their subconscious that they have not ever dealt with in their lives, and they are loath to deal with because they like not having that personal responsibility. When someone's in the mentality of a child for so long, they often fear the unknown because they fear growing up and leaving the nest, so to speak, and they don't want to basically grow up and take their own personal responsibility. And so they keep wanting to give it to this proxy, this psychological proxy figure in the form of mommy and daddy government.
With the left-right political arena there, that is actually slipped over into the talking about the brain.
Nick, that's what happens to the brain. Your left hemisphere controls the right part of your body, and your right hemisphere controls the left. So it makes perfect sense what Mark is saying. It's actually quite profound and brilliant that now I'm thinking about it. If you have an overactive left brain, you're going to see a right-wing version of politics. And you think about the masculine aspect, even when you had like Margaret Thatcher running the Conservatives in England, everyone always spoke about how she wasn't like a woman at all.
They often say that she was the best man to get the job.
It's funny. Well,
you could just see the right and left brain imbalance in the two party types. So just think of the liberals often have the compassionate side active in them because they're concerned about the poor, they're concerned about the have-nots, and I'm not telling anyone that they should not be. We should be concerned about these kind of issues and the dichotomy between rich and poor, haves and have-nots. That's certainly a valid issue to be concerned about. You see in the left-wingers, they have the concern, because they have the right-brain hemisphere active, They are lacking, in many cases, the left-brain hemisphere because think about the other thing they want. They want gun control. The other thing that a lot of leftists want, they want the state to have the guns, and they don't want people to have the guns. You could see it's a hallmark. All the characteristics of that whole political side of the spectrum, that side of the political spectrum on the left, it's hallmarks of right brain dominance and not having enough left brain balance to the hemispheres of the brain, to the psyche. If you look at the right wingers, the Republicans here in the United States, for example, they all are kind of lacking that, and they're big into business and they are big into gun ownership because they're about keeping what they have, there's not as much concern when it comes to the imbalance that exists in the financial spectrum, so they're lacking the right brain or compassionate side, but they have an abundance of the left brain qualities and understand the importance of gun ownership. So you can see how this dichotomy, it just plays off one against the other to keep the whole slavery system going. As long as there's that strength of putting one polarity against the other, you're forming what is generally referred to as an arch, the strongest structure in building, because you're putting two polarized, diametrically opposed forces against each other, and they lean on each other's strength. And that's why it's so difficult to break down that left-right paradigm, because there's so much brain imbalance in people, believers in both sides of the political spectrum, the false left-right paradigm. There's so much brain imbalance there that when the brain is imbalanced to that extent, it is very difficult to see whole picture thinking, to engage in the dynamic of understanding the big picture, because that only comes when one is already in a state of brain balance. with this perpetual imbalance, it can be very difficult for people to see both sides of this monster are there to control you and enslave you. And, you know, it has nothing to do with being on one side of political equation or the other. It's about understanding it's all an illusion. It's all a system of slavery, and it all needs to go.
And when they do the voting, they get a snapshot of how left or right brain the population are, don't they? That's whoever they vote in.
Yeah, it's a great survey
for demographics. Voting. Hi, everyone. Anyway, it's
hi
here. Hello. Hi, Mark.
Hi.
It's only you go to a polling station, not a voting station, so they're actually only taking a poll, not a vote.
Yeah.
Can I just chime in here as well about just what you were talking about there about left and right brain and the male and female thing?
Sure.
Because I was talking earlier with Swami and about something, and I was saying like how society in general that when we grow up and you move from experiencing the world as a child, and quite rightly the world revolves around you as a child, and you're exploring, you know, and that freedom is important as a child. But then as you get older, you go through the transition of actually taking care of and having that experience of being able to just go out in the world and do as you please. The transition moves to where you become the person who is taking care of others, whether it be children or older relatives or, you know, that kind of thing. And so you're moving into a different phase in your life. And so, yeah, you begin to see the world differently and experience the world differently and experience other people differently, because you're actually looking at the world through their eyes in some way, because you're having more empathy towards people. You're reaching out. It's not about you anymore. It's more about how you see the world through other people's eyes, and how you can help them with their experience of the world. And so this is kind of a maturing process that goes on for all of us, male and female. But the world around us that we see and live in, it's very much we're fed with these ideas of being needy, that we, you know, we should want products and we should want things, and that we're inadequate in some way if we don't want these things or if we don't have these things. And so this is kind of pandering to I need these things, I need this, I need this. It's like the kind of mother aspect. And then on the other hand, once we have things, we have to then protect them, because we have something to lose then, because we've got the big house or the whatever it is, and we need to live in a gated community because,
right,
you know, other people who are needy will want to take these things from you because you now have them. So this kind of panders to the other side of the paradigm that you're talking about, whereby the protector kind of then comes in, and it's a very immature mindset, because it's never,
yes,
looking at what is, you're never switching from the me mindset to the, you know, what can I do for the world around me and the people around me. And I'm not saying that in a communitarianism manner,
right,
either, because, you know, communitarianism is more of a all individuals working in a certain way, whereas actually we all need to work in our own particular individual way to achieve this. You know, not everyone will perhaps become, I don't know, I'm not going to use examples of how we should be or shouldn't be, but this manifests in different ways within everyone, but you will just find yourself moving from a position of being, as you mature, moving from a position of being, having the world revolving around you, to,
right,
actually having to accommodate for other elements in the world, be it children, older relatives or friends or people around you. That's the point I wanted to make. Thank you.
Absolutely. I think you hit the nail right on the head, because what you're really saying here is that people are never, throughout their lives, coming out of the modality of egocentric behavior and the desire for only service to the self. Okay, so egocentric behavior, egocentric thinking, the desire for only service to self without caring about the world at large around them, to look into the bigger, wider issues of what's going on in the world that are outside of their tiny little sphere of influence in their personal lives, okay, and those that they surround themselves with. The very definition of that mindset is Satanism. And this is something that when I say to people and I try to explain this to people, they, you know, it's almost like there's a revulsion or it's like they want to lash back when I explain that's what Satanism is. Satanism is that very mentality that you're talking about. And when I try to explain this to some people and they're like, hesitant to believe me that that's what Satanism is, and then I tell them I was a priest in the satanic religion in my past. So it's like I liken it to, like, if you went up to a rabbi and you said, do you think this rabbi would know a thing or two about Judaism? Well, most people wouldn't believe that the rabbi would know a little bit about Judaism. If we went up to a Catholic priest, do you think a Catholic priest would know a little bit about at least exoteric Christianity and exoteric Catholicism? I would think so. He's a priest in that religion. He should know a bit about it. He probably should know a whole lot about it. If you went up to an imam and tried to ask them about some of the tenets of Islam, you would imagine that they would know what they are talking about. Well, as a satanic priest, I deeply studied the ideology called Satanism, whether you want to look at it as an ideology of how to live your life in the world or whether you want to look at it as a religion. I consider it a religion, a false religion at that. Back then I didn't. You know, I thought it was the greatest thing on earth and, you know, went into it very deeply. But when I do know the tenets of this religion called Satanism. And when I explain to people that this is exactly what this is, that the idea that I don't really care about anybody but myself, I'm out for my own interests, all of the other things that are going on can be put on the back burner and take a back seat to what's going on only in my personal life. And if it upsets me or if it, you know, interferes with what I'm trying to do in my personal life and my personal goals, it doesn't make a difference what's going on. I need to shut all of that out, and I need to only engage in service-to-self behavior. Okay, so that's egocentric service-to-self behavior that doesn't really engage or consider the lives, the needs, or the suffering that is taking place with other individuals. By definition, what I'm trying to explain to people is that is what Satanism is, literally, by definition. That is what that ideology is. And, you know, the word, I think, confuses and puts off people from the understanding of what the ideology is because they have not read into it. I recommend to people, all people should that want to understand what's going on in our world. Really should have already read. If they haven't already read it, they really need to read it, The Satanic Bible by Anton LaVey.
Yeah.
That will describe this ideology to a T. He was commissioned by the higher-up dark occultists to write this book. I feel after studying the dynamic and the interplay between different satanic orders that LaVey himself wasn't inspired to write this book, that he was charged to do it by people who were higher up in the pecking order than he. And he was kind of the front man that would gather in a psychological kind of vetting system, which is how the Church of Satan and other organizations like the Temple of Set, for example, are used to interface with the public and find people who have the psychological characteristics that these much higher level dark orders and societies and dark occultists are looking for to do their bidding. Yeah. So it would much better be called egoism. Okay, if people were to refer to it as egoism rather than Satanism, it might be a much easier task to get people to understand this as a religion. But people don't consider just, you know, being egotistical a religion. I'm trying to explain when someone is hyper egotistical in the way you just described, that is a religion, and that religion is actually called, there's a name for it, and it's called Satanism. And that is what most people in the world are trapped in. They are trapped in the religion of Satanism and don't even know that that is their religious belief system.
Now, that's really funny you're saying that, because a friend of ours is in the chat room right now just asked, what are your thoughts on the Crowley quote? Give me a good Roman Catholic and I'll show you a great occultist.
And which has a kind of perversion of the Jesuit thing, which is show me the child and I'll give you the man.
Yeah, the whole world is under this deception that they're believing in a particular ideology when in fact, culturally, all they're really doing is subscribing to Satanism by whatever other name you want to, or way that you want to euphemize it. You know, I've proven this time and again. I give the example. I just gave this example openly in my natural law seminar that I did in Connecticut, and I told the family. I actually, you know, said the family member that I did this with. I went up to my grandmother on my father's side of the family with a list of the tenets of Satanism written, typed out, printed out on a piece of paper. And I covered up the name. I took a little piece of white paper and taped it over the headline of the page, and it listed all the tenets of Satanism. In other words, moral relativism, egocentric behavior, service to self over above all else. The self viewed as God or as the highest force in the universe. Believing in kind of eugenics, or you know that you know undesirables should basically be done away with, or you know, and et cetera and so forth. It was just all of the things that the satanic ideology is about, and I just covered the headline, which said the main tenets of Satanism. And I asked her to read the page, or maybe it was two pages or something like that, and just tell me what are your impressions. Just tell me what you think of what you just read. And she said, I agree with everything that was written there, and essentially this paper is describing how I think. This is how I live my life, basically. And then I said, well, go ahead and remove that that little piece of tape over there that's holding that piece of paper down and obstructing the title of the page. And she took it off, and it said the main tenets of Satanism as a religion. And I was expecting her to be horrified and for her to say, oh my God, you're kidding me. This is what Satanism really is. This is what they teach. This is what they believe in. And I believe in this. Oh my, what's wrong? You know, what's wrong with me? Not at all. She took off the piece of paper, looked at the headline. It said the main tenets of Satanism as a religion. And she said, well, I guess that makes me a Satanist, doesn't it? And I said, yes, it does. Yes, it does. And unfortunately, you seem to think that's okay, that you're totally comfortable with that. And you don't understand that also makes you a bad human being. That's the definition of what a bad person is, by definition. It's not only the definition of a religion, it's the definition of what basically a heartless, soulless person who doesn't really give a damn about any other person in the world. That's what it means that you really are, you know? And, you know, that's most people. And I'm not saying that to be just vicious toward other individuals, but more people than not are in that service-to-self modality 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 and a quarter days a year. Most people. Now, that's not to say that the people who aren't in that mindset, you know, aren't, it's great that they're coming out of that mindset and, you know, they're growing spiritually and they do care about others. But I would absolutely, if I'm being honest with myself and others, if you ask me, are more people in that satanic ideology than are not, I would say not only is it well over 50%, I would say it's well over 75% of human beings on this planet are in that ideology, for sure, maybe more.
Wow. Oh, yeah. I mean, is Lucifer not mean the light bearer as well?
Yes, that's another one of those twofold or dualistic definitions. Again, there's a positive incarnation to the concept of Lucifer, and there's a negative incarnation to the concept of Lucifer. So in the positive incarnation, it does mean the light bringer. So we break this down from the Latin. The English word Lucifer as a name comes from two Latin words, lux in Latin and ferre. Lux is a noun and ferre is a verb. Lux is the noun that means light, okay? And then ferro ferre means to bring or to carry. So putting them together, you get lux ferre or Lucifer, and that means to carry the light or to bring the light. So if we are embodying the archetypal figure of Lucifer in the positive incarnation or the positive interpretation, we're not talking about a real being here. We're talking about a conceptual idea that is embodied by the symbol of the being Lucifer. The positive or good Lucifer, if you will, and yes, there is such a thing because this is simply a symbol or a way of looking at something, okay, or an archetype, if you will, okay, it means literally the carrier of the light or the bringer of the light. So if you're bringing knowledge and you're bringing empowerment and you're bringing enlightenment to other people, okay, carrying that information and that knowledge to help them to understand, you can look at that as you are doing the positive Luciferian work, okay? And if you did press me and say, do you consider yourself a Luciferian? I would say, yes, I do. I consider myself a Luciferian in the positive aspect. I consider myself an esoteric Christian, okay? If you understand the deep core esoteric roots of the Christian ideology, the Christian philosophy, okay? I would consider myself that as well. I consider myself an esoteric Freemason. I consider myself an esoteric Rosicrucian. I consider myself an esoteric Kabbalist, all of those things. I consider myself someone who practices a Thelemic philosophy as well. Okay, all of those things, because I consider my approach to reality what I would call an integral approach. It isn't something that you have to say, I'm all this, okay? I take all of the most positive and empowering teachings from all of the different traditions, put them all together into a framework to try to understand and live natural law. So, you know, I don't consider that a religion, so I would not use the term I'm a natural lawist or believer in natural law or that's my religion. Again, I see that as what is true, those laws that basically govern creation and human beings, and either we understand them or we do not understand them. So to finish the question, the negative aspect of Lucifer, and there certainly is, this is certainly real as well and exists as well, but again, it's an archetypal symbol. It's not an actual being. Okay, this negative incarnation of the concept of Lucifer means one who has that knowledge and that light, but is hoarding it all for themselves, doesn't want to share it with other people, okay, and is just taking more and more into themselves and trying to keep that knowledge by whatever mechanism they can away from others so they can form through this knowledge differential that is developing between them and others, them being having the light, meaning having knowledge about how things really work, and others not having the light, being in the darkness, being kept in ignorance. When you have this great knowledge differential, that converts in the real world to a great power differential. Okay, so that's what a dark Luciferian is doing with their ownership of the light or their ownership of knowledge. They're taking it into themselves, hoarding it away, sequestering it from others as best as they can by whatever methods that they can, and then using that knowledge as a weapon to maintain the power differential that has resulted as a result of that knowledge differential between them and that other class of human beings. That is the exact wrong and immoral way to use knowledge in this world. And that's what I would say, you know, this archetypal concept of the dark variant of Lucifer is there to illustrate the idea that, well, there's the understanding of how things work. That's natural law. And that's God's law, if you will, okay? That's the law that has been put into effect by the creator of the universe, whatever you happen to see that force as. The negative Lucifer wants to be God. It wants to be the creator. It wants to usurp the creator's role, the creator's place. It wants to overthrow the creator of the universe. It wants to overthrow its law. It wants to be the law, okay? So that's the negative Lucifer. And, you know, this is embodied. Both of these concepts of the, if you will, another way of looking at this, I believe Freda Rex has often used the dichotomy between the Illuminati and the Illuminators. The Illuminati, or the illuminated ones, are looked at as this, you know, interconnected society of people in the know who have this knowledge but want to use it only for their own personal gain and to enslave everybody else and get them to basically look up to them as a god, and they're worshipped as a god on the earth, and they're overthrowing the true natural order, which is living under the natural law of the universe, okay? So the Illuminators, on the other hand, are those who also have that same knowledge. There's no difference in the knowledge that these two groups of beings hold, okay? The dark illuminated ones hold the knowledge of how both the human psyche and the laws of nature work. Those are the two aspects of the occult, by the way. You know, when we talk about the word occult, it comes from the Latin occultare, which means to hide. That's all the word means. When we're talking about occult, it means hidden knowledge.
Yeah.
So the kind of knowledge that is hidden is twofold. There's what's called the lesser knowledge and the greater knowledge. The lesser, and that doesn't mean as importance. It means lesser or minor knowledge means the knowledge of how the individual consciousness works, meaning the psyche of the being. Okay, and then the major or greater knowledge, as it's called in the occult, and they use the term arcana or arcana to use the word knowledge. That just means knowledge in Latin. Okay, the greater knowledge or the greater arcana is the knowledge of how the laws of the universe work. In other words, natural law. So when you put these two bodies of knowledge together, how the human psyche works and how the laws of nature work, and if you know those things and you keep that knowledge as sequestered away from other people as possible, you are in an absolutely ideal position to control them if that's your mindset. Because they don't know how these things work, you do, and you could totally exploit that advantage. For example, look at the priest kings in ancient Mesoamerica. Okay, thousands of years ago in Mesoamerica, these priest kings, they would totally control the population by their knowledge of astronomy. Well, they would know when a solar eclipse was going to happen because they understood the solar cycles. They understood the cycles of the earth and the stars and the planets. And if they recognized we have this knowledge, we could exploit this and make these people see us almost like gods, because we'll tell them the sun is about to go away. The sun god's getting ready to go away. And if you don't do exactly what the priest class tells you to do, he's never going to come back. All the crops are going to wither and die. Life on the earth isn't going to be able to continue because there'll be no food. And you're going to be in a whole world of hurt. So therefore, you know, if the sun god goes away, that means he's angry because you're not listening to our commands. You're not listening to our will well closely enough and doing exactly what we tell you to do, when we tell you to do it, and how we tell you to do it. So then when the eclipse would come exactly as predicted, all these people would fall on their knees before the priest king saying, well, you're the intermediary between the gods and us. And it will be that easy to control them in many cases. And the same is true today, except, you know, we don't have priest kings. We have government officials that want us to obey them exactly as they say. And the knowledge that they have that we still lack as an aggregate population is the knowledge of how the human psyche can be manipulated. They have that. They know how it works. They use it constantly in their mechanisms to keep people under their thumb. And until people understand those methodologies of mind control, nothing is going to change. That's what is needed. That's the knowledge that is hidden. So in other words, what I'm trying to say is we need to become knowledgeable in how the occult works, the hidden knowledge of how the human psyche works, the hidden knowledge of how the laws of nature work. If we're not knowledgeable in that, and we don't want to look into it because we're afraid of the word, that's another mind control technique. You know, they say, be afraid of the word occult. It's bad. It's all bad. Well, that's how you dissuade someone from looking into it. It's a dissuasion tactic. You don't even need to prevent people from actually having that knowledge, because it would be very difficult to do in the information information age, okay? All you really need to do in the modern day is tell people that's all bad and it's evil and it's satanic and you should never look into that information. Well, right there you have the person, you know, dead to rights, dead in the water before they've even begun the search for information. And they have to understand what the word means, and the best way to do that is to go back into the etymological roots of words and understand all the word occult means is hidden, and that idea that being scared of a word needs to be eliminated, and we need to look at that with that whole body of knowledge without fear if we're ever going to level the playing field.
I like your little word association game you said in one of your podcasts about say the first thing that comes into your mind when you mention the word occult, and it always will be mm-hmm. the pentangle or the Baphomet or anything like that, won't it?
Yeah, that's like the first image that usually pops into people's mind. We did a little social experiment with about 15 or 20 people at the last natural law, extended natural law seminar that I did here in Philadelphia. And I asked all these people to basically ask multiple people what they thought, what their first impression when they hear the word occult is, what's the first word that springs to mind. And 90% of people obviously got the definition wrong, and the real meaning isn't the first thing that popped into their mind. Most people said bad, evil, satanic, or some other type of occult school of thought like voodoo or Satanism or something like that. So while 90% of people, that was the range of their answers, about 10%, 1 in 10, actually did know the real meaning of the word occult, and when they said, what do you think of when you hear the word occult, they said hidden or secret, which are both acceptable answers for what the word really means. So I would say we need to do a lot better when it comes to that, more than 10% of human beings. And I would say that's probably a skewed result too, because it was coming from people who were taking my seminar, and therefore maybe their circle of friends probably were a little bit more knowledgeable. So if you really ask the average person there, I'd say it's probably closer to 1 or 2% that really know, in a worldwide scale, that really know the definition of the word, and we really need to do better than that and get people to understand what the word occult really means and what this body of knowledge really constitutes.
Yeah. Well, the podcast I was referring to that I listened to was about a year ago, and I tried it with a bunch of people I worked with, and none of them said hidden or, you know, secret or anything. It was all what you said, voodoo or...
Right.
Baphomet or whatever, you know, even...
That's mind control, isn't
it? Yeah, I mean, it's...
That's mind control, isn't it?
Yeah, well...
That is mind control.
It's a mindset, isn't it? More, yeah, mind control, absolutely.
Because people are just fed information...
Engineered ignorance.
Yeah. That they don't even stop to consider the word as it is. They just, like you say, in the image... The word, the spell, puts an image in your head of the pointed star.
And that's what a connotation basically is. A connotation is what someone perceives as the meaning of a word. A connotation is not necessarily a definition. See, we need better definitions of words and terms, because better definition means better clarity. So if you're using words and you don't have good clarity of what the meanings of words mean, you're not going to understand anything that comes later when you try to explain a concept to somebody. If they don't have good idea of the understanding of the definition or the clarity of the meaning of the word, the whole concept is not going to make sense to them that is trying to be expressed. So this is a great form of mind control. Obfuscating the definitions of words in people's minds. I'd say it's one of the most powerful forms of mind control. People have simply called this word magic or you know, word games, or, you know, rearranging the meanings of words in people's minds. Just look at another one. Here's a perfect example. Anarchy. You say the word anarchy to most people, and they have literally, the mind controllers of the world have literally gotten people to believe in the meaning of the word anarchy, which has absolutely zero to do with the actual definition of the word, okay? So it would be like saying, you know, what is the definition of happy? and you get them to paint a picture in their mind of a person beaten into unconsciously and almost to death, lying in the street in the pool of their own blood. Okay, that's the equivalent of how mind-controlled people have to be to think of the definition of anarchy as what most people think it is, because you give them that word association game to play. You say, what do you think of the word anarchy? And they'll immediately say chaos, okay, or breakdown of society, chaos, you know,
yeah.
Lawlessness, that's another big one, lawlessness, people equate with anarchy. If you go into the etymological definition of the word anarchy, okay, A or an in the Greek language, and anarchy comes from Greek, both parts of it. The prefix A or an, when we add it to a Greek word, means the absence of or the negation of, or in other words, meaning not present, not there, okay? And then the main body of the word, anarchy, comes from the Greek word archon. Anarchon, anarchy, okay? Archon means ruler or master. And literally in the term, in the definition, as a master over someone else, a ruler over someone else, as a king would be a ruler or a master of his subjects.
Okay? A monarch.
Authority.
A monarch.
Right. Monarch. A monarch means one ruler. Mono means one. And then archon, ruler, okay? So it's an unquestioned authority figure that essentially owns other people. He is the king, he is the master, he is the ruler, and then others are his subjects or his slaves. So when we put these together, then, we have archon, and that's the body of the word, and we add a prefix in front of it, a or an archon, means the absence of a ruler over someone else. See, and people insist that this means lawlessness or the absence of law or the absence of rules. It does not mean that, because there's always present natural law. Okay, we are always under the natural law. And again, the natural law, for people who may have not heard this term or understand my definition for the term that I use, that entire term, natural law, it has nothing to do with Darwinian theory, okay, of what people think of as the natural order. There's another form of mind control through words. The word natural itself has been hijacked, okay? So it means moral law, essentially. It means conscience is ruling. Okay, it means a definite understanding of the difference between right and wrong behavior, and then willfully choosing right action over wrong action. That is what we mean by understanding and living in harmony with natural law. You could call it moral law or God's law. I don't care what you want to call it, but it essentially means living under conscience, the definitive knowledge of the objective difference between right and wrong behavior. So people have... we put these things together, an archon, it means the absence of a ruler or a master. Now, if you say someone is not ruled by someone else, there is no master present over another individual, what would somebody say that means? If you said, give me one word to describe that condition.
An anarchist.
No, yes, but if you said, give me a word to describe the condition whereby there are no masters and no slaves.
Freedom.
Sovereign.
That's it. Yes, freedom. People would say freedom, okay? And yet, when they say the word anarchy, they don't equate that with freedom.
No.
They equate that with hardship and suffering and lawlessness and chaos. So think of how monumental. How monumental this form of mind control is through the obfuscation of the definitions of words. They have gotten people to accept that a word that actually means freedom means chaos and suffering and lawlessness. Imagine that.
Yeah, that's crazy, because that word was brought into our consciousness in Britain, especially in the 70s with the punk rock movement.
Yeah.
And the right. Sort of, you know, the violence that came with that sort of thing. I mean, there's a lot of good things about the punk movement over here, but essentially sure. It's a violent kind of, you know, chaos, lose control, sort of do what you want, spit on people, because, you know, that's the sort of done thing to do, because that...
And I'd like to chime in on that because I'm a fan of older punk music, you know, and like the Sex Pistols song,
yeah.
I Want to Be Anarchy. People often ask the question, why would they phrase it like that? I want to be anarchy. Okay, they're not saying they want to be a state of existence. They're using the literal definition of the word, without masters, without rulers. I want to be without masters. I want to be without rulers. Okay, recognizing that that's not the current case, but I desire that. I want to be in that state of existence, in that condition. So it's a great expression in that song. And, you know, I do feel, as you just said, the early punk movement was healthy in that regard, talking about real anarchy in many cases. The modern-day punk movement, if anybody follows it or looks into it, it's just terrible. It's completely laden with statists, with people who believe in slavery. And the hardcore metal or form of music called hardcore as well, and even a lot of the metal music community has also been completely hijacked, and it's because the people who are brought up in the modern world who play these forms of music, they're just as indoctrinated and mind controlled as everyone else, and it reflects in the music.
Yeah.
There are certain subsets and subgenres within all of these genres of music, though, that really do understand what's going on, and they're really trying to highlight it through their music. But those bands are few and far between, and when we find them, we should definitely support them because there's not enough of them.
And they're usually independent rather than, you know, all these bands. They're all on labels that are controlled by, you know, like a handful, you know, it's just like the movie industry. All the people that are on, like, Kerrang and NME looking really, like, scary and, you know, they're all just, you know, pretty much co-opted, you know, it's just a job.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. And that's why when
you get
that kind of money.
The great example of that is the distance
Go ahead, Thomas.
I was just going to say the distance between the Sex Pistols and Henry Rollins. Henry Rollins is... Yeah, no, I was just saying that what you're saying, that the distance between the original punks, you know, what you said about the Sex Pistols, and, say, Henry Rollins... Henry Rollins goes on and eulogizes constantly about the greatest album was Nevermind the Bollocks and all this, the Sex Pistols. And yet, if you look at Rollins, he is an absolute total conformist. I mean, he is nothing more. He's literally a pure statist. I saw him speak in Dublin a few years ago, and he whipped out a copy of the U.S. Constitution and spoke about how he carries his document around with him and how it's so precious to him. And then he goes on about, like, then he segues into the whole thing about, oh, the Sex Pistols changed my life and their lyrics and everything. And I'm looking at the guy saying, you could not have drifted further from the original roots of early punk than you have now. It's amazing how far it's gone, how conformist it's become. And he's sort of seen by the mainstream as a kind of a counterculture figure. He couldn't be any more conformist. He's like Ronald Reagan or something.
I agree. Well, and, you know, the same thing has happened, again, with the hardcore music community. You know, they started out with, the same general message. And you see a lot of the icons in that movement that are obviously complete statists and conformists. A band I like in old hardcore is The Exploited. You know, they were really talking out against the whole slavery system, and, you know, didn't mince words whatsoever. I mean, you very rarely see anything like that in today's hardcore music. You know, it's like I said, there's so few and far between that when we do find bands that really have a true message of freedom embedded in their music, they're often, as you said, they're often independent artists because labels won't even take a lot of that stuff on it because they're controlled by big business interests. And when we do find bands like that, I think they definitely should be supported in the community.
I didn't think I could hold you in any more higher esteem than you just said. You're an Exploited fan. That's incredible.
I like all that old stuff.
Yeah,
we
often talk about the Exploited here on the...
Yeah, how about old Nuclear Assault? You know, they were talking about mind control back in the 1980s in a lot of their music.
Yeah. Well, Crass and Conflict and all these other bands that are, we call them the anal punk scene over here. from the late 70s, early 80s. I mean, they amazing, incredible.
Yeah, that's the kind of music I was into back in my youth. I still listen to a bit of it today. Not as much as I used to. I'm obviously much more busy with other pursuits. But that was kind of my musical taste. You know, when I was growing up listening to music.
Cool. Yeah, I think they exploited
when Iron Maiden started out their single.
Yeah, the original.
Go ahead, Steve, sorry.
Very much like that. Very much anti-establishment. But they weren't as good as the Exploited, though.
I mean, you could even look at, if while we're on the subject of music briefly, you could even look at bands that started out with an anti-establishment message, and then it seems as if something or someone got to them. You know, I mean, look at the difference between, for example, an album like Metallica's "And Justice for All" album, which the lyrics were phenomenal; they were brilliant. And then moving into some of their later material, which it seems like all in one shot, somebody just got to them and said, "Hey, you can't be talking about stuff like this anymore. As big as you're getting, people are going to, you know, really start listening to what you're saying at some point." You know, and I think somebody may have got to them, you know, or they just sold out for the money, one or the other.
They just did a concert in Antarctica, so they're like the first band to have played all seven continents.
Right.
Well, they're
about early Queensryche too. I mean, their Queensryche's message when they first started out was also highly anti-establishment, and then that trailed off over some of their later material as well. It seems like, you know, maybe someone got to some of these early acts back in the 80s that were really coming forward with a strong anti-government stance, and you know they definitely put the kibosh on that, so to speak.
We spoke about this last week with a guest about the early Beatles, and they were definitely got to and sort of moved, you know, because they were sort of doing tracks like Taxman and stuff like that, which
Paul McCartney forgot how to play bass.
Then he was replaced, and suddenly they're sort of taking drugs and going, you know, it's
getting on the hippie counterculture psyop.
Yeah.
But then, I was just saying there about Iron Maiden, their four singles had a picture of that monster guy, that cartoon guy killing Margaret Thatcher.
Eddie.
And then, you know, and that was all the lyrics were like that. And then next thing you know is the original singer's gone, Bruce Dickinson. A sort of a public schoolboy comes in, and the next thing, it's all songs about the Battle of Britain and all this kind of thing. This kind of nonsense, and they're superstars.
Getting back to our occult thing, what does occult mean?
Yeah.
And funnily enough, Iron Maiden was about Thatcher, wasn't it? Because she was called Iron Maiden.
Well, they're a punk band originally. Well, if you listen to the first early records, that they're a punk band. I mean, they're not a metal band.
No. I can't remember. It wasn't Breaking Away, it was Priest, wasn't it? There was another. The first single is actually a punk song, you're right.
Running Free. It even has that Malcolm McLaren almost drum bit. You know, like Bow Wow Wow or something, or Adam and the Ants.
Crazy. Yeah, it's almost like, you mentioned Metallica, it's almost like they're a solstitious band these days. They don't have really much to say, do they, Mark?
In the very early days, I think they built up to it. And, you know, when you look at some of the lyrics on an album like Master of Puppets, it started getting a little bit more toward the political side of things somewhat. But then certainly on And Justice for All, they came out with both barrels loaded against the establishment. And that album sold so well, I guess because it was their first album after their bassist died, their original bassist, who was real influential, Burton. You know, I think right after that, you know, something happened there. And it wouldn't surprise me if they were paid a visit, or if maybe certain people in the music industry went up to them and said, hey, this is going to lead to an image that you don't want if you want to keep making money hand over fist. But one or the other of those things happened to them, as far as I'm concerned. You know, I may or not be actually correct about that, but I think it reflects so much in the lyrics and the content of their music that I don't see how it really could be any other way.
Yeah, well, songs like Nothing Else Matters really doesn't say anything to anybody, does it? I don't feel any way.
Couples to go to the gigs.
And now we just get already co-opted bands giving us this false message, like we've discussed previously, such as bands as Muse with their like faux new age bullshit.
Or even punk bands like Green Day.
Yeah.
Are they a punk band? Come on.
No, they're a pop band.
They've got loud guitars. But
yeah, or even, well, goth bands. We get Evanescence. You know, we go from Susie and the Banshees to Evanescence.
Yeah.
How'd that happen?
Yeah, we're talking about them now. Well, they're just a Christian right band, aren't they, Evanescence?
I don't know, but they're a lot of, like, sort of, like, plastic suburban goths love them.
Yeah.
But you do see a lot of the new age message come through in a lot of modern pop culture as well. You know, even on things like television, on, you know, US TV shows that are on broadcast during the daytime, that, you know, many, I guess, you know, single parents or single housewives may be very interested in and watch, like Oprah Winfrey. You know, she's injecting so much of this new age ideology out there into the pop culture, and again, it's not real spiritualism. You know, it's again, we're talking about the hijacking of real spirituality and putting people onto this, you know, onto the garden path, if you will, of the new age movement that is really what I call the last cul-de-sac before the gold mine, meaning, you know, it's the thing that people think is the gold mine, but they're actually being led around in a circle, and they're not really understanding true spiritual tenets. It's pseudo spiritualism is what it really is, because real spirituality engages both hemispheres of the brain, not just the right hemisphere. It doesn't take away the left hemisphere based thinking of logic and linear thinking and breaking things down, and also being willing to defend oneself if one is under attack by violence. You know, it incorporates both the non-aggression principle and the self-defense principle. And that's what the New Age movement wants to be working on, only one half of that equation, namely the non-aggression principle, which they have a very good understanding of. What they lack a deep understanding of, and again, this is being peddled in all this pop culture through the New Age movement, that people like Oprah and certain musical acts and, you know, and other celebrities are promoting, is the abandonment of the self-defense principle. You know, that's not involved in real spirituality. And again, I say nothing could be further from the truth. There is no true enlightenment without both of those tenets firmly understood and integrated into one's behavior and lifestyle. Both the non-aggression principle of do not do violence to other people, do not initiate coercive behavior against others, and that needs to be combined firmly with the self-defense principle of, if violence is done unto me, I have a natural inherent right to defend myself with defensive use of force if someone else is conducting violence which they have no right to conduct against me. And that's a natural inherent individual human right. It's not something that only the state may engage in, as a lot of people think. You know, individuals have a right to physically defend themselves with force in any situation where they encounter violence. And that's a hard swallow for a lot of people in the modern day, because they're so brainwashed by things like the New Age movement.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to say, when you talked about, you know, the right to use force, okay, government has a monopoly on using violence against people. And some of the things I'm looking at right now, I know that we're, you know, it looks dark before the dawn, but we are, through the internet, slowly changing the collective consciousness of the world. And there's a few things I want to just chime in. When you talk about
Sure.
the use of violence against people, there's nothing more hideous to me than the cancer industry, the cover-up of all the cures that are out there. That's violence. 8 million people a year are killed through the chemo surgery cancer industry. 8 million
yes.
a year in the world. And then NSNBC International, a story just broke. Now it's getting out on the web, but it's been out for a while, that through a FOIA request, the CDC had to give up their vaccine information documents. And the CDC has known for 30 years that vaccines don't work, that they cause the diseases that they're supposed to prevent. They know that they're a hazard to children. They colluded to lie to the public and work to prevent safety studies. And I looked at the chemtrails, the cancer industry, the GMO, you know, and you look at all this stuff and you say, how come people aren't waking up? How come people aren't freaking out? A Gallup poll just came out in America. 72% of the respondents said that the federal government is America's worst enemy. Back to you, Mark.
Wow. So it does look like, you know, consciousness is slowly shifting toward understanding what's really going on, and I would definitely highlight the word slowly. But I do also feel it is happening, and that's why it's so important to keep up this pressure and constantly put this word out and, you know, not give up and not stop what we're doing as the alternative media, which is what we are. You know, that's what we're really engaged in here is, you know, the real media, the so-called media, real media, the mainstream media, failed at its job. They are not doing journalism, which is by definition printing what others don't want you to print. They're engaging in public relations. They're printing exactly what they're, you know, the people who pad their pockets are telling them to print. That has nothing to do whatsoever with journalism. So what we're engaging in here is telling people what they don't want to hear. That's real journalism. That's the real media. You know, we're the real media. They're the frauds. They're the fakes. They're the imposters. And which is why it's so important to get involved in the process. The people who know what's going on can't continue to stay silent. We still have too many people who are in that mode. You know, and you know, some of my tact against people like that, it can be pretty harsh because, you know, I talk about it in ways that are unapologetic and often, you know, it is taking a shot at them. It is taking a pot shot, if you will. You could call it an ad hominem attack, if you will. But, you know, I don't even look at it as that because an ad hominem doesn't actually say what the person – it doesn't actually address the real issue. I am addressing the real issue when I talk about what these people are like. I've often referred to this as pseudo-adulthood, okay, or the illusion of adulthood. It's the people who say that they know what's going on in the world but don't speak it to other people. You know, it's like I'm good because I know what's going on, okay? I'm good because I know what's really taking place. I'll read a website, you know, I'll read these books and study, you know, these topics, and I'll know what's going on. And then I may apply it to my own life. I may apply it to myself, but I'm too cowardly to go out and say it on the public stage. You know, don't ask me to start my own radio show or my own blog or my own website or whatever, or start doing presentations and lectures in my community and tell people about what's going on. Another term I've called people like this are, you know, they're armchair quarterbacks when it comes to spreading the message of what's taking place in the world. And this is the problem why the awakening process, if you want to call it that, is going so slowly. See, people have been sold this New Age notion. It's just part of the New Age BS idea, ideology, that enlightenment is only applicable to yourself, and you've arrived at enlightenment when you kind of know what's going on and have changed yourself. And what I've been trying to tell people is no, that is not arriving at enlightenment. That is arriving at the very beginning stages of going on your way to becoming enlightened. You've just gotten to the beginning of the process, or maybe if we're being charitable here, maybe you've gotten to the middle of the process by that point. But let me tell you, that is not the end of it, okay? I look at it as the beginning of the process, because until you start working upon other people, being an influence for them by telling the truth, by putting the truth out there into the world, you're not really applying what you know, okay? This is where I was at back before I started my What on Earth is Happening lectures. Back in, I would say I was spurred to do it in probably late 2006, and I began the process of putting all of that together in around 2007. But until that point, I knew largely what I know today. I may have learned a bit more since then, but I'm telling you, the knowledge base that I have today was still present around that time. I'd say around 2005 and 6 is when I kind of arrived at the knowledge base that I have today. And I stayed silent for a while. And I tell this story, this little anecdote, that I went to a meeting in Virginia, okay? And that's very synchromystic as far as I'm concerned. It's the state named after the goddess, okay? Virgin, Virginia.
And
I met someone. Yes, exactly. I met someone there who recognized that I was very knowledgeable in a lot of these different topics and asked me point blank, what are you doing with your knowledge? And I said, what do you mean? Well, she was like, well, are you doing lectures? Do you have a website? Are you doing videos? Are you recording your stuff and putting it online? What are you doing with what you know? And I said, well, not really much. No, none of that stuff. I answered one after another when she asked me, am I doing this with it? I said, no. And, you know, she looked at me right in the eyes and said, what makes you think you have a right to do that? What makes you think you have a right to stay silent with what you know? She said, you're a pressure valve that has no release with all pressure coming into it. The exact words were, she said, you're like Niagara Falls in a water balloon. Trying to put Niagara Falls in a water balloon. You have all this knowledge coming in. None of it's going anywhere. None of it's going out. She said, that's recipe for disaster, actually, because it's all building up inside of you, and there's no release valve. So she said, real spirituality is when you start turning that outward and putting that out there for other people so that they can understand what you have come to understand. That's when you're on this real spiritual path. Well, New Agers are essentially, for the most part, told, this is all about you becoming enlightened. And no, that's the end of the process. Oh, you meditated your way to so-called enlightenment. You know, you've released a lot of negative tendencies in your life, and, you know, you're not actively harming other people. But what are you doing? Are you telling people the truth about what's going on in the world? Are you warning them about the police state? Are you trying to explain natural law to them? You know, or even smaller things, like are you trying to explain to them how astrotheology is really what religion is all about? Anything. Get involved in the truth discovery process, but then you have to get involved in the truth spreading process, in distributing, the distribution process when it comes to truth. And most people are loath to do that because they don't want to put themselves in even a semi-public light, okay? Because they're concerned about what other people are going to think about them or what they're saying. And that's all fear-based mentality once again. So I call the people who claim to be knowledgeable yet are inactive in the world, and that's, make no mistake about it, that is what's keeping the dynamic the way that it is. We may be on the way toward a spiritual awakening, but what is keeping it, the general consciousness still firmly asleep, is that there's not enough people spreading the truth. Even if they know it, they're not speaking it. They're too timid and afraid to speak it. So I call them the knowledgeable, quote-unquote knowledgeable, yet inactive. Or simply, I call them the armchair quarterbacks. It's real easy to quarterback a football game from the chair with the remote control in one hand and the beer in the other hand. Real easy to do. But get on that battlefield, get on the gridiron, and actually be in charge of directing that game, okay? And then it's a whole different story about how it really goes. It goes one way in your mind sitting on that chair with, again, the remote in one hand and the beer in the other hand, but it goes a whole different way. That story, you know, is told an entirely different way when you're on that actual playing field. And this is what most of these people still don't want to do. They don't want to get up, get active, get on the playing field where they can actually make a difference. They want to tell you, oh, I'm so knowledgeable about what's going on in the world, but they're actually doing nothing.
Yeah,
and I would say that those people are really cowards. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, if I could just come in and make a comment as well, that I think that also within the way the information that people are brought and the way that they take in this information. It's kind of there are very many people around who are kind of bombarded with all this information, and then the best way that they can assimilate it is just to go and go blah, 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 and kind of blurt it all out, and they don't really know actually how to bring the information out properly, and so they end up just blurting things out which are inappropriate perhaps for the person that they're speaking to. They haven't kind of got a measure for the particular audience that they're talking to, and then it all it's all like, oh, nobody understands me and I'm a loner, and you get these kind of truth movement loners who feel that nobody understands them. Well, actually, people do understand you, but you just need to understand yourself better and get a better understanding of what the information is, so that you don't just kind of blah, you're not just repeating whatever's being brought to you. And I think sort of having looked at this a little bit as well, is that it's people's thinking skills that let them down a lot of the time, because through the education system we're taught to where there's a question, there has to be an answer, and that answer has to be A, B, or C. You're taught through these short answer questions, and so when there's a question about something, if someone says, oh, well, this is the answer, then people go, oh, right, okay, and then they go back to sleep again. But just because they've got an answer, they're satisfied with that, and it doesn't necessarily matter what that answer is. People can't just absorb the information and just take in what is really happening, because that process that you say, which is quite true, that it very much is a process. It's not, the first time you hear a piece of information like, you mean they're putting fluoride in my water? No. You might want to go out and start, speaking inappropriately about certain things, and suddenly you're getting bombarded with all this other information, a lot of which we have to realize may not necessarily be true. And so you can't just go out on the hoof and just start repeating everything that you've heard, because you're just like Chicken Little then. You're not actually assimilating the information and actually taking on board. And it is very much a process where you this information comes in. It's a lot of information to take in. You have to take it on board, understand what it is, and then be able to put it over to people in a way that can be understood, and people also need to listen to that in a tangible way, so that they're not just jumping to conclusions all the time,
so that they can practically apply it in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely, because I think that so many times people you just see people jumping to conclusions, and they're going from this to that to this to that, and not really actually assimilating the information in a proper...
Yeah. They'll jump on the labels that other people have put on it, and therefore...
It's
like what we were saying earlier about cult and stuff. So.
You've just really described there beautifully is the trivium process. That's what the process of the trivium is, taking in the knowledge that is seemingly very disparate and all over the place and embodies a whole lot of data. You're bringing it together, incorporating it into yourself, analyzing it so that you come to an accurate understanding of it. That's the understanding, or the second stage of the trivium process, the first stage being the knowledge, the gathering of knowledge. And then you're then outputting it to others. That would be the wisdom stage. It's what you do with what you know in a practical sense that affects the real world. Mm-hmm. So, this is all has to do with self-knowledge, knowing what you are capable of and what you're good at. Do you have good information aggregation skills? Can you take things in from a eclectic variety of sources and bring them together and make sense of the data? You have good organizational skills. This is something I talk a lot about in my extended natural law seminar, and even in the shorter one that I recently gave in Connecticut. I put a slide up on the screen that talks about, if you're going to get involved in the spreading of the truth, in the distribution of what's really the information about what's really going on here on this planet, you yourself need to have a required skill set. There's a required skill set that goes along with being able to do that. And I think these practical real-world skills may be with what a lot of these people are lacking. And either at a conscious level or a subconscious level, they know they lack these skills, and therefore they do what you're talking about. They just go to the nearest human being and try to just blurt it all out in one sitting. And we know where that leads us. That doesn't work. And that just gets people to say, who haven't heard of any of this stuff, they haven't even begun looking into one iota of it, wow, that sounds all crazy compared to what is going on in my mind. You must be paranoid or delusional or insane. Okay, so that gets us nowhere. Well, what you need to do is look at the required skill sets that are even needed to begin this process of distributing truth to others in a way, as you said, that makes sense and is practical, okay, can be easily applied. And those skill sets are, I just want to talk about a couple of them because this can be very helpful to people who may be saying, well, yeah, that's me. I'm the person who's trying to reach people, or I'm the person who I feel I have a handle on this in my own mind, but I don't know how to go about reaching other people or go about, you know, really putting this in some sort of an organized way so you could teach it to others. That's what we're really trying to create. If we're really coming out and saying what we're trying to do, we want to create other teachers of this information. We don't just want to create other people who help people to understand it. We want to do that too. But I think our bigger goal should be we want to create other teachers. That's what my goal has always been from the inception of doing What on Earth is Happening. And many people are somewhat confused about that. I tell people I'm not looking to wake up every individual that encounters my website. I recognize that will not happen. What I'm looking to do is for the people who do find great value in the information I am putting out on that site, I'm trying to spur them on to actually do what I'm doing with that information and be a teacher of it. That's the ultimate goal as far as I'm concerned. But if we could just briefly take a look at some of these skill sets that I think people should have, I think it will help some people who are listening and saying, yeah, I'm that person who needs to develop some skills to be able to reach out to other people. Well, I'd say the first thing you need is organization skills when it comes to information. And that means really understanding how to effectively use a computer. In today's world, that's what it means. Okay? People who are technophobic and want to say, oh, technology is only on the bad side, don't understand. It's a dual-edged sword. It's how we use it. Okay? Is it going to be used for enlightening others and helping people to recognize the truth, or is it going to be used for control? Well, it can equally be used for either of those purposes, depending on who's wielding that technology for their purposes. So people have to get over their fear of computing. In the modern day, most people already have basic skill sets who are in a general age bracket. Most people coming up as, you know, children in the modern world, of course, are going to have some computer skills and have been using them since they're young. But for anybody that doesn't, I'd say organizational capabilities with a computer is absolutely essential. It's not. It's something that's required. It's not an option. You need good communication skills, which means you have to have a good vocabulary and a good usage of words. So conversation and understanding many words, a large vocabulary, is absolutely essential. Now, that's not to say you can't put things in simple, easy-to-understand terms, but, you know, you want to be able to be somewhat eloquent with your words and, you know, string a few sentences together and not be shy about that. The other thing that I think is necessary is specific types of computer skills. So graphic design skills. You know, if you're going to do speaking, let's say, in your community, you need to promote it. You need to be able to make up a flyer, even a simple flyer with just text, and print it out, and then go get some copies made and post it in your area, you know, so that people know it's happening. Okay, so communication skills are very essential, you know, or emailing people, understanding how to build an email list or something like that. Graphic design, being able to make simple flyers. Presentation skills. If you're going to go and speak in public, you might want to make a PowerPoint presentation. You have to know how to do that. You got to know that program. You got to know PowerPoint or Keynote or Impress or something like that that makes slides. Audio. If you're going to get involved in putting your voice out over the internet, you got to know how to work with audio files, MP3s, WAV files, whatever you're going to use. Video, if you're going to make YouTube videos and edit them, you have to know video editing software. Website, you have to know how to use a content management system or a blog at the very least. And then there's other skills, marketing and promotion and networking with other people that all play into play a role in this set of interlocked skill sets that people need to develop. And again, I think one of the big reasons that people don't get involved in doing the work of distributing the truth is because they know that they're lacking in a lot of these skill sets. And my advice would be, hey, instead of watching that game on Sunday, or instead of doing other pursuits that may be somewhat trivial, take some time out of your schedule, make time in your schedule, and start learning a new skill. Start learning a new skill set when it comes to being able to record information, organize information, and distribute information online. Because online is where this battle is ultimately being waged. You're going to reach the most people when you put your information online in some form, whether it be through a website, a blog, a podcast, a video series, something of that effect. Of course, writing is essential as well. Knowing how to write and put paragraphs and sentences and paragraphs together, as important as anything else that I've just talked about. A book is a monumental effort of work that definitely reaches a lot of people. It's something I've been asked to do by so many people I can't count, and it's something that I am going to consider doing in the future for me, but it's something I haven't gotten involved in doing yet. I've chosen other forms of media because I certainly prefer the spoken word. That is my preferred form of media. But writing a book is also another option. So all of these skill sets have to be looked at and taken into consideration, and you have to know yourself. See, that's the whole thing where self-knowledge comes in. What are you best at? Choose the thing you're best at. Or, hey, at the very least, choose the thing you're the least bad at, okay, and start from there. Go from there, even if you're intimidated by all of what I just said. Start with the thing you're least intimidated at and you're the least bad at, and you have a little bit of confidence that you may be able to do, and start learning that skill set, and then start putting the truth out there with those skills. And that's my recommendation to people, to get up off their rear ends, stop watching from the sidelines, and get on the battlefield and start playing and getting involved in changing the dynamic in a practical way yourself in the real world.
It's probably a good point too. Can we just read that statement to you that a very good friend of ours sent regarding
sure.
Good show.
Oh, did you explain sure. what it was? Yeah, this is a little message that's been sent to us from our very good friend.
He's our esoteric correspondent, basically.
Most excellent esoteric correspondent, I have to say. But he can't be with us this evening, unfortunately. So he sent us a little email, which I'd just like to read out to you, Mark.
I'm sorry, what is the gentleman's name? Once again, I didn't get his name.
His name's Vic.
Vic, okay, great.
And he says, hi, Mark. Sorry I can't be there on the show to speak with you tonight due to a prior engagement. But I would just like to say thank you for what you're doing by wielding the sword of truth in order to cut through the Gordian knot of New Age bullshit. There is much talk of awakening these days from many whom it would seem are still in their slumbers. Although there are many genuine heartfelt seekers after the truth and also much interesting but often nescient academic research into the history and origins of religion and the ancient mystery traditions, etc., in the endeavor to decipher the riddle of the so-called human condition and internal and external occult mechanisms of control that bind us to psychological slavery and facilitate the ignorant state that mankind currently finds itself within. There is an old saying that the road to hell is paved with good intentions. Along with all the New Age bullshit, there also seems to be a proliferation of pseudo-esoteric bullshit mixed with much intellectual speculation on occult matters, with the alternative media, which at best is just interesting infotainment, at worst serves as a distraction from the anything of a real authenticity or value to the seeker. This is why I believe, or should I say, I know, from what you speaketh, that you are one of the very few who actually brings something truly authentic from the teachings of the perennial wisdom to the table
And by doing so, even if many who listen to you are unaware of the fact, are actually initiating them, those who bother to pay close attention, as neophytes into what would be seen as the preliminary degrees of the lesser mysteries of the greater work, by providing them with the tools and foundation or cornerstone from which to cultivate a psychological revolution of consciousness and birth of spiritual consciousness, that which can lead to an awakening of the true illuminism. So with that said, I salute you, Mark, as a true warrior, arc of light, and mercurial messenger of the Logos in this time of the Kali Yuga. May the power of Dat carry your word. With much vitriol, V-I-T-R-I-O-L, vitisam interiorum terre rectificantum inventias occultum lipendum. Merry Christmas. Hopefully speak in the future. Cheers, Vic.
That is really great. Very heartfelt. I want to thank him for that. And I love how he ended there with the vitriol saying from alchemy, which is visit the interior of the earth and there you will find the hidden stone. This is all about self-knowledge, ladies and gentlemen. It's about going within and resonating, you know, in the core inner recesses of your being with the truth that we all do know. And yet, you know, we are putting the blinders on and, you know, playing roles in this reality and, you know, engaging in different forms of illusory forms of consciousness. But deep down in that inner core of the being, the truth resides, and that's what we have to not be afraid to go within and get to that truth that lies there within all of us. So I want to say thank you to Vic for that. That was really beautiful.
Excellent, yeah. Right, he will be sending the same gratitude back for your thoughts, Mark. The hymn of the pearl, basically, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, and it's What he's saying is true. This is about an initiation process. It's beginning. That's what initiation means, starting something. We are starting something. We are lighting a fire, if you will, you know, starting that fire in the minds of and the hearts of human beings to spur them on to go further and really look past all the different forms of illusion and mind control. And, you know, religion and the New Age movement are just some of those techniques. You know, they're multifaceted and they're all around us. And that's why not only is discernment needed, but persistence is needed. Persistence is one of the main things. And, you know, as he said, yes, we're in the Kali Yuga or the age of destruction and the age of darkness. But that's not to say that our efforts here aren't going to have an impact, you know, in the future for humanity. So don't give up, and persistence is one of the main virtues that we really need to have, even though it may look like the darkest hour. And even if you don't think it's going to yield results, you have to do it anyway because it's the right thing to do. That's how I think of this. You got to release from the attachment. Release from that is one of the things that I feel the New Agers do have right. You know, even if you know this isn't going to make an impact in the here and now, maybe not even in your lifetime, continue to do it anyway and be persistent, because you have to release from the attachment for immediate gratification. I struggle with that a lot, but I feel I, you know, do that to a good extent in my life. And you have to constantly try to pull yourself back into that mindset of it's irrelevant whether this is going to wake up the world now and I'm going to see the result. I need to do it because I know that's the mission I'm charged with and it's the right thing to do, period.
That's what they do.
That's what they do, exactly. That's what the other side do. They won't see their vision come to fruition in their lifetimes, but they do it for the follower of the cause of what they're doing.
Right.
The great work of ages.
Yeah.
And that's also a dual, like you're talking about, that's a dual thing. People hear, I want to address what he said about, you know, people who think that they understand the esoteric side, because that was pretty powerful too in that greeting that you read. You know, the alternative media wants to, you know, kind of group anybody who talks about the occult in a positive light as, oh, it's all, it's just all one thing.
Yes.
There is the dark great work.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of misdirection going on there, isn't there?
You know, of building the world of enslavement and tyranny. Yes. And then there's the true great work. You know, I've often talked of this as one great work. You know, the one real, true great work is to build the world that is based in truth, love, and freedom. That's the real great work. So when people see things one-dimensionally, they're limiting themselves. You know, that symbol on the back of the dollar bill is the symbol of both the Illuminati and the Illuminators. It's the world in transition. Which new world is going to be built? A world of light or a world of darkness? A world of freedom or a world of slavery? You know, so symbols are dualistic and they can mean different things to different people. When people see things in a unidimensional way, they're not getting the whole picture. And that's why further study is needed. You need to go deeper into the meanings of these symbols and understand, wow, you can interpret this in an entirely different way. And it means something different to a certain initiate than it does to another. You know, so we need to, in that pyramid that's being built there, that's the darkness. That's what blocks out the light. We need to rip that away, break down those barriers, that stone that is heavy and weighing us down and is blocking the light from coming into the world until there are no more barriers to the light. And the light comes down and joins with the earth and bathes all the people in its brilliance and illumination. That's the positive way of looking at that symbol on the back of the dollar bill. In the negative way, of course, yes, it represents those who want to be the light, as we talked about before, and they want to hold that knowledge and they want to build the world of darkness, which is represented by that pyramid, a male dominator structure, the blade, the hierarchical, pyramidal structure. And, when they complete that, the light will go out from the world. If you finish that pyramid, it builds over the all-seeing eye, which is the source of light. And then they're the ones who have the light, and they're hidden in a world of darkness, and they rule over that world of enslavement and tyranny. That's the negative interpretation. So symbols and sigils are not unidimensional. They have to be looked at from many different perspectives. And when you have a lot of esoteric information about how to read symbology, you can see both of those, or often multiple interpretations, more than two, three, four, five, and many. So that's, I think, part of maturing when it comes to understanding the esoteric information. It's not like you're just saying, oh, that's all bad and that's all here to control us. No, it's just knowledge and how it is used. That's all it is, and that's all it ever has been. And I think, Vic made really great points in that little letter there, and I want to thank him for bringing up those points in there and allowing me to comment on them for a little bit.
That's beautiful, Mark. Thank you very much. We're fast running out of time, unfortunately.
Sure.
Do you want to just shout out a few things?
Sure.
About your website?
Sure. Well, I'll give people my website. That's how to reach me online is whatonearthishappening.com. That's my website, whatonearthishappening.com. You can go there, and there's a huge body of knowledge there in the form of audio, video, some documents as well. And I highly recommend to people who are new to my work to go to my it, – it's very tempting to go right to my videos, and I'm not saying don't watch the videos, but the videos should be understood in context. They're like what you would call primers, okay? It's to whet people's appetite for the main course. And the main course is the podcast. If you go to the podcast page and you go back to number one, okay, they're listed in reverse chronological order, the most recent at the top. If you go back all the way back to number one on the, I believe it's the third page of the podcast section, and you start from number one and listen to them in order, that's what I recommend, because that information there is a tapestry of all the knowledge that I have amassed over the last 20 years or so.
Yeah, I recommend it.
It's a tapestry that requires a linear building process, let's put it that way. Like, you can't build the third floor on a building until you build the first and second. That's what this is like. So it's a tapestry that it's about prerequisite knowledge. So if you started it like podcast 130, okay, you're not going to get the effect of starting at podcast one and moving forward. I always give people that little caveat before they start with that work. And I tell them, just take it at your own pace, at your own leisure, and a whole new worldview will open up for you. So that's where you can check out my work, whatonearthishappening.com. And gentlemen and lady, I want to say thank you so much for having me on the show today. All of your insights were very valuable, and let's do it again sometime. Thanks so much for having me on today.
It was a pleasure. Was all ours, Mark. Thank you so much. And
thanks for coming on, mate.
Yeah, that's just I can't believe that's 2 hours.
Yeah, fantastic, Mark. Thank you.
Lovely talking to you.
Yeah, no, it flew.
And,
absolutely.
And you are welcome anytime you want.
Anytime you like, so yeah, yeah. We just one thing to say to you. No.
Freedom, man. That's what it's all about. You've got to groove on freedom, like the good book says.